Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Hi, I'm John McEnroe.
I'm Bjorn Borg.
This is Martina Navratilova.
I'm Mats Wilander.
I'm Stan Wawrinka.
I'm Leighton Hewitt.
I'm Andy Murray.
And you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Tennis Podcast, brought to you in association with The Telegraph and with Eurosport. I am Catherine Whittaker and I'm joined for 1 week only by our Andy Murray Live correspondent, David Law. You've got a different hat on every week, David.
I have, yes. I hot-footed it up to Glasgow for one night only to watch the return of Andy Murray against Roger Federer. And it was very... It was very nice to see him back on court. I didn't expect to really be that bothered. I mean, I don't mean to that sound bad, but, you know, it did occur to me when I got there that, crikey, we've not seen this guy for 4 or 5 months on a tennis court. And it had become increasingly a concern for me, I must say, as to whether we, not that we ever would, but certainly that he would ever be the same again. And he might not. But he looked a heck of a lot better than I expected him to, and he was throwing himself around the court and looked in much better spirits and physical fitness than I expected him to. So we got that to talk about and lots more.
So what wildly overreaching conclusions can you draw about Andy Murray's physical, mental, emotional, financial, everything well-being? Because pretty much every British tennis / sports journalist was up there for Andy Murray Live, the name of which, incidentally, I think it's a fantastic event, and I think Roger Federer supporting it this year is huge, really huge. Roger Federer's never played in Scotland before. That's a big deal for a lot of people there. That will be their one and only chance to see Roger Federer play live. And I think that's a really special, wonderful thing. But I do chuckle to myself every time I hear the name. It sounds like he's going to do stand-up comedy or something, Andy Murray Live, don't you think?
I think it's quite a good name, actually. I think it really brought it home to everybody that, yeah, you get to see this bloke in person, and not everybody
funny that
up there has had the chance to do that. But incidentally, I don't think you've got too much to worry about in terms of his financial well-being. I think that bit's pretty much sorted.
Okay, so that's covered. Emotional, he's had a... that's an extra aspect to it all. Kim had actually given birth, his wife Kim had given birth to their second daughter, congratulations to both, a few days before, but they had kept that quiet until after Andy Murray Live, the stand-up show, and they did a very good job of keeping that quiet. Did people know and were going along with the vow of silence, or was there collusion, or did people, when I say people, I mean, you know, the journalists? Or did they genuinely not know?
I'm not sure about the journalists as a pack or individually. I mean, I can tell you for now that it had been well over a week before, because I knew well over a week before and I wasn't saying anything to anybody.
Oh, did you now?
Yeah, I did.
I can confirm that David didn't even say anything to me. Who do you get your gossip from?
I'm not telling you. I'm not telling anybody, but anyway, that was the case. But I don't know, that's news that only, as far as I'm concerned, only the people that are the parents of the kid have the right to reveal.
Of course, but it is quite impressive. Of course,
I was going to tell anybody about it.
It is quite impressive in this day and age to be able to keep. You know, it only takes one orderly at the hospital, doesn't it, to tweet something or mention something to their loose-lipped mate for it to become public. It really doesn't take much at all. So I do find it quite impressive if they had been able to keep it quiet for a week. I think, yeah, good on them. No, and yeah, good on him for doing such a cracking and undistracted job at Andy Murray Live, which did feature, although there wasn't any stand-up comedy from Andy himself, it did feature some more jovial moments, shall we say,
some
David?
Hijinks, yes.
Because, some hijinks, wow.
Because, yeah, Roger Federer put on a kilt. I'm sure you've all seen the pictures. He was hitting forehands and backhands and serving and volleying it for a game and a half. He then presented Andy Murray with a wig and a tartan hat. That had been
none of this was pre-planned. None of it.
This was certainly the latter. It looked like Roger Federer had been to some local tat stall and bought it and handed it to Andy Murray and made him wear it. But I mean, that, you know, I mean, look, it was a really well run event. I mean, what an amazing venue! First of all, the Hydro in Glasgow holds well over 10,000 people, and is it has that theatre feel, and yet it's huge. It was a special arena, that was, and I'd you know, it would be an amazing place to host a big event if they could ever figure it out a way to do it. But the feel of the place when the two players were introduced onto the court, there's obvious excitement wherever Federer gets introduced. He's such a global star. And much loved. But when Murray came onto the court, obviously in Scotland it's at its absolute fever pitch, but it went through you. It made you shudder, the noise in that stadium, and people couldn't control themselves throughout the match shouting out things that they'd obviously been saving up for the last 12 years watching him on the telly to shout in the direction of Andy Murray. But in terms of the way he was on the court, I got so accustomed over Queens and at Wimbledon to that look of just confusion as to what's going on in his body and doubt and not feeling himself. He was still doing that slightly shuffling, awkward walk. But when he was running around the court, and I can only say this from my vantage point courtside as a layperson, because I'm not a player or physio or anything like that, but he didn't look in any discomfort. He wasn't wincing. He didn't look full of doubt. He was maybe a little more circumspect as he was running for balls, but that would be expected. I know other people that watched it felt less optimistic. I know Andrew Castle was one, and maybe he's right and maybe I'm wrong, but certainly I thought he would be a lot less comfortable looking than he was. So that bodes well, doesn't it? Because he's hoping to come back properly in January in Brisbane.
Yeah, in terms of what he said to the assembled press pack, he certainly didn't absolutely commit to coming back in Australia in January, did he? He said that's his intention, but he certainly wouldn't be risking coming back unless he feels 100% sure that his body is as right as it's going to be. I deliberately don't use the word his body's 100% or that his body's completely right, because I get the impression that that's not what's being aimed towards, that this is a injury management situation rather than an injury cure situation. But yeah, he certainly didn't absolutely commit and say, yep, everything's gone to plan, I'll definitely be in Brisbane, which is not helpful to all those journalists who were wondering whether or not to book a flight out to Brisbane or not. But
no surprise. We didn't. I think anybody who's covered or listened to Andy Murray over the years, you don't get categorics. And I don't think he knows anywhere. I don't think he is 100% sure. He won't know for the next few weeks. But he is.
No, and he also said what I was going to point out. He also said that. The venture to try and play the US Open, the venture over to the States, the practice sessions to try and get fit for New York were a mistake in hindsight. So that realization as well will add to his caution regarding his next comeback.
I think that's a very good, I think it's a fair point, isn't it? But anyway, I was in enthused on his behalf, and it was a great night, and I think they raised over £500,000, and they seem to get
a lot of money.
They got along famously, did Federer and Murray. It seemed like a really great collaboration, and so good for them.
Good for them. David Law is enthused, so all is right with the world. Are you, David, enthused by the Next Gen ATP Finals?
Well, they've just reached the semi-finals stage, haven't they? It's Borna Coric against Andrei Rublev and Hyun Chung against Daniil Medvedev in tonight's semi-finals, as we talked to you on Friday afternoon. You're asking me about the setup and the feel and all those rule changes that they've employed.
Yeah, look, I'm going to go through the rule changes one by one, and we're going to discuss our assessment of those. So what I'm asking for preliminarily, David, is your more general assessment of the hashtag Next Gen ATP Finals.
Well, I've only really watched
draw ceremony aside,
a couple of matches properly. I watched one last night, a proper five setter where Borna Coric came from behind to beat Karen Khachanov, and it was my first real opportunity to sit down and just watch it properly. And I thought there was a lot I enjoyed about it. I thought that the atmosphere seemed a bit flat, flatter than I expected in a way. I think part of that is, you know, it's a new event. It wasn't a completely packed house. And I do think that there is still some this inevitable confusion with the rules. And plus, these are not household names. It's difficult for people to really dial in perhaps quite the same way. But I think the venture is an excellent one. I think it's the right thing to do that the ATP has done to stage this event, and for all the reasons that they've staged it. I like the idea of it. And I have varying views on all the rule changes. What did you think? You've been watching it all week.
Yeah, I've done a couple of days of commentary for ATP Radio. I've probably watched a little bit more than you, but I don't think it takes too long to sort of get a feel of what it's all about. My feeling is the same. It's not a perfect event. I'm glad it exists, is the bottom line. I'm glad they've done it. I'm glad it exists. I think it's been, by and large, enough of a success that they'll look to do it again. Obviously, you know, it's come about as a result of having this sort of exciting, easily marketable crop of young players, and that won't necessarily be the case. It'll probably be okay in a year's time. You know, Shapovalov's only 18, but whether that will be the case in 2 or 3 years' time, I don't know. But I'm glad it exists. In general, my feelings are a lot more positive about the non-scoring based changes than they are about that. I'm not keen on the scoring that they're adopting, but there are lots of other aspects of the experimental features that they're trying that I am a huge fan of. Shall we go through them, David?
Yes, we should. And if you don't mind, I'll just insert the pole vault results for each one of them as we go along, because I very much do mind,
but I can only assume you'll do it in as seamless and inoffensive way as is possible.
I'm going to try not to annoy you.
Right then. No lets. No service lets. What do we think, David?
Yeah, I would probably do that. I think I said last week that I think that it's sensible to get rid of lets on serve. I don't think in the match that I saw that there were any. So it was slightly difficult for me to judge. I mean, that's one of those that split reaction. 48% like it, 52% don't. There's been about 700 votes for each one of these. But, what do you think?
I think it's one of the ones that people feel less strongly about, whichever side of the argument you come down on. It's not going to fundamentally change the complexion of tennis either way, is it? I just about come down on the side of yes, do it, but I don't feel particularly strongly about it. And I do think it's going to take quite a long process of adjustment. I've seen a few of them in the matches that I've commentated, and there definitely is a split second where the players have to remind themselves that the point is in play, and it's not going to be another first serve. So I think that one could take a bit of an adjustment process, but on balance, probably, yeah.
I have to say, though, I do feel that if a match came down to a let cord ace on, you know, to win a title, I'm not sure that would feel particularly satisfactory.
Did it feel satisfactory when Hawkeye stomped all over the winning moments of Federer and Muguruza, the Australian and Wimbledon Open? Well, it's not the
No,
Wimbledon
but at
Open.
Least it's not that blind luck work. That's intervening, but, is it?
But you could still have a tournament decided by a net cord. You could have a shot dribble over on the net cord. So why is it different to it happening on the serve?
Well, only in that it's a single shot, but, you know, effectively, right. I think that's
a distinction that's bigger in your head than it is in reality, David.
Okay. All right. Well, I don't have a massive objection to it, so I'll allow it.
Ooh, okay. Right then. First two, four games over best of five. Can I go first? Because I hate it.
You just have.
Yeah. I really don't like it at all. That's my least favourite of it. My least favourite is the sudden death juice. I see exactly what they've tried to do, and I think the upsides of it have come off, but I just think the downsides are so huge. First and foremost, I think that particular rule scoring format is largely responsible for the flat atmosphere. I don't think people know that it was kind of engineered to create a feeling of, you know, every point counts, every game counts. There's no sort of lull in the middle of a game. But actually, I think the cadence of tennis, there's something really beautiful about it. The way that, you know, there could be a few games in the middle of a set in a particularly competitive match where you just know it's going to go with serve, and you're building and building and building towards the inevitable and hugely anticipated climax, and you don't get that here. I don't think people know sort of when to get excited and when to build the anticipation and when not to. I think it could be a case of people need to adjust and get used to it, but for me it just, yeah, I love the building. I just think tennis scoring is a thing of absolute beauty, and the upsides don't justify messing with it for me.
Yeah, I do think that there is a possibility, as you mentioned, alluded to there, that the fact that we're just not used to it, that it feels weird. But at the same time, I ultimately share your view. I actually thought it was a perfect illustration of it working quite well last night when Čorić was two sets to love down and came back and won in five of those things. But And I spoke to Stephen Farrow, the Queen's Tournament director, who was over there for the day to sample it. And he liked the fact that he felt that immediately points matter in each set, which I also take that point. He felt that it was energised in that way. Personally, I would probably prefer to do two full sets and a champions tiebreak if you're going to go for a shortened version of the sports in that way. Yeah, I didn't particularly like that staccato feel.
Shall I move on without a pole vault, or would you like to tell me?
Oh, yeah, just very quickly to back up your view. 89% don't like it. Only 11% do.
I'm glad I asked. Right then. Wow, that's about as high as a pole vault gets, isn't it?
That's about as much of
a landslide. So no ad games then, is that as much of a landslide? Because
Don't 88%
like it.
Don't like that either. And we talked about it last week and said we don't like the idea of it, and I still feel the same.
Yeah, precisely. I think that's one of the few actually where I feel exactly the way I expected to feel about it. And my feelings haven't changed. So see previous podcast for Whitaker and Law assessment of no ad games. Headset coaching, David.
I loved it. I mean, and I so didn't expect to feel like that. I mean, I thought it would be good. No, I thought, as you know, I've liked on-court coaching in the past, but I liked this a lot more. And there's a couple of reasons why. One is, I mean, I think it doesn't feel quite right what they're doing, saying to coaches, you know, we want you to speak in English. That feels slightly one-eyed and little Englander or you know, totally dominated by the Western world. But at the same time, it did make for a compelling television experience in that regard. I still would prefer a subtitle system so that people can do what they want and be understood by us as viewers. But what I loved about it, and maybe it was just this example of a match that I saw last night with Chorich and Hatchinov, the fact that they weren't in the players' faces, kneeling in front of them, meant that you got a conversation that you wouldn't necessarily get, in my opinion. I think you work harder when you're on the telephone a lot of the time than you do when you're in front of somebody. Body language is not as instructive in terms of tactics, etc. And it's too easy to sulk in front of somebody's face. When Chorich was having a chat with his coach and when Hatchinov had a chat with his coach, you got proper analysis, proper strategizing. I mean, you got some silliness the other day with Shapovalov and his coach talking about the price of coffee in Milan, which was quite funny. But I just feel like you are getting added extra with this system. And I absolutely loved headset coaching, and I think that they should just bring it in immediately.
Yeah, I think it is absolutely essential if it is to be implemented on a wider scale, which it absolutely should be. We've decided, David, and our instructions should be heeded. I think it is essential that translation be made available. I don't think it's okay to make an Italian player and coach speak in English. I share your discomfort with that. Equally, as a broadcaster, I was pleased because it provided such an insight, but I think in principle that's not really okay. But the heads, it being via headset rather than with the coach physically on the court and it having to be picked up by sort of weird radio mics that they've got tucked into their jogging bottoms, it makes translation a lot more possible and feasible in a seamless way. So I think that's important. But look, I loved it. The exchange between Shapovalov and Lorando, his coach yesterday, I loved that. My brother texted me at the time and said that exchange just in itself had single-handedly converted him to headset coaching. And he was very much opposed before that. He did then revert back to his previous feelings. But he said he thought there was an added layer of interest with the young players because there is psychological work in progress. And I thought that was an interesting spin on it.
It is. I have to say that the Shapovalov bit was probably the bit that I preferred it when it was real. I mean, although it showed a good side of his personality, I mean, they were fooling around.
It was real, though. It was real. It wasn't like, I don't know if you heard, you know, Zverev flew in and did some waving on Tuesday and played an exhibition match with Stefanos Tsitsipas to show his support for the next gen finals. And he put the headset on and he had Marcelo Melo there as his quote unquote coach. And that really was a taking the P exchange. And I found that a bit annoying. But I think the one between Shapovalov and Lorando yesterday, they'd done the technical chat. And then, you know, he was trying to keep him loose. He was trying to keep him...
Yeah, interesting.
Yeah. Loose,
which is which
relaxed.
I always say about Kyrgios, don't he, I?
Because the advice was, it was really refreshing actually. The advice, he said, this is a great match. What he said, this is the match of the tournament so far. Enjoy, you love competing. Enjoy the contest. Enjoy playing tennis like this. And so I think that relaxed chit chat was part of it.
Yeah, I missed that bit. One bit I liked was when Hatchinov was struggling and it went two sets all and Gala Blanco just said, you're tired, aren't you? And he said, yeah, I am. And it was just such an insight into what he was going through. And then the attempts to try to energize him. And I did think, you know, good on you, Gala Blanco. I mean, he speaks decent English anyway. But
did you see the exchange between Khachanov and Gala Blanco on day one when Khachanov was playing his good friend, Daniil Medvedev?
No.
When Gala Blanco was just basically throwing massive shade on Medvedev, he was saying, you can't lose to this guy. He's rubbish, basically.
Wow.
He was
saying,
yeah, you're look at him. You are such a better, more complete player than him. You shouldn't be losing to him. It was fascinating, absolutely fascinating. You know, Jan Michael Gamble had no headset discussion with poor Jared Donaldson, who looked like he was overwhelmed by the whole occasion, frankly. I felt really sorry for him throughout the week. Really didn't look like he could relax and enjoy it at all. But Jan Michael Gamble had said very clearly he doesn't believe in it. He believes in the problem-solving element of coaching. And as far as he's concerned, Jared is out there on his own. And I sort of felt like he was at a bit of a disadvantage because of that. I felt like, you know, some encouraging words from Jan Michael Gamble might not have gone amiss at certain stages.
Well,
but then that's a tactic in itself, you know, whether or not they choose to use it.
Maybe in a short-term situation, well, it certainly probably did do him a disadvantage, but I suppose the view is that when you get to the Australian Open, you don't have that. So, you know, until they do, then it's almost self-defeating.
And Jared Donaldson, as we discussed last week, is all about the long term, isn't he? He's such a level-headed. He's about the slow and steady progress to reach his goals. So
the poll vault view on headset coaching was that 49% like it and 51% don't. So, you know, that's not bad. It started off with many more liking it than not. But anyway, I'm sold.
I'm sold as well. I'll choose to ignore that pole vault. The other issue with it is that although it's great for us commentators, reporters, it might not be so great for broadcasters because you can't take your eyes off it. To go to an ad break when there's coaching happening is doing a complete disservice to your viewer. But then when do you stick the ad breaks in?
Well, you've got to turn it around, haven't you? You've got to play the
I know
best
that's
the
what they do on the WTA, but I don't know. I would feel annoyed if I were watching tennis and I saw Denis Shapovalov reach for the headset and then it cut to an ad break. That would annoy me.
Right,
anyway.
Well, sorry, ad breaks. You can't come on because Catherine wants to hear the chat.
Yeah, on court shot clock.
Well, I mean, you know, it's just a no-brainer, isn't it? Why would you not do that? It's 25 seconds. It shows everybody in the whole place how long the players have got. The players don't then abuse it. The umpire can't let them off and has got every reason to show the player why they've got a crack on. I mean, there's just no reason not to do it. And 75% of our poll vault voters agree with us. So
it's an absolute no-brainer. This isn't even a rule change. It's just actual consistent implementation of an existing rule.
It's going to happen. The Times has reported today that the slams are meeting and that'll be on the agenda, as will
headset coaching.
I think certainly an on-court coaching discussion is going to be had. I think that I think that they may well resolve to have different systems at each tournament. You know, I don't necessarily think Wimbledon will do on-court coaching or headset coaching, but maybe the US Open will.
It's
so
funny, you know, that Chris Kermode, CEO of the ATP, has been very open with his dislike in principle of on-court coaching, and he openly said he was hoping that particular innovation was one of the ones that people were less keen on. So he's potentially facing a quandary now.
But that's another reason why he does a good job at this sort of thing, because he just throws it open, he puts on an event and he says, right, well, let's try it all out. My view is I don't like it, but let's find out what everybody else's
view. Tennis podcast view is that they do, so we'll do it. Hawkeye for all lines, David.
Yeah, I mean, that was absolutely 50-50 in the votes. 744 people. I mean, you can still vote, by the way. There's about another 10 hours to go. But I thought it worked well in the match that I saw. I just don't like not having human beings on the court in the way I'm used to. And maybe it's just me being an old stick in the mud. I don't like not having those people out there. And I also think that it's important for bringing through the next era and generation of chair umpires that they come from line judges. I'd rather they kept it as it is.
Yeah, I mean, I don't feel as strongly about it as I thought I might. It certainly, in terms of the technology, it worked seamlessly from what I could tell. I was very impressed with the implementation of it. On balance, I would rather have line judges. I like seeing the human beings. I felt it was a little bit soulless. However, I suddenly realised the possibility for, you know, the voice. I hadn't realised that there would be sort of one voice. Can you imagine if, like, you could get Ian McKellen to record the call of out and fault in the voice of Gandalf? You could have Gandalf the Grey calling lines.
Or, but like, you could
get Brian Blessed, who we know will do an answer machine message for a grand. So,
as will the tennis podcast.
yeah. So I suddenly realised those possibilities. Yeah, I mean, I'm being silly.
Yeah, but why would you do it when you've got Kaida Nooney just on tap?
Because it's Gandalf the Grey, David.
Yeah, but it's Kaida Nooney. No. And he's got the greatest voice in the world.
Gandalf the Grey. Each match starting 5 minutes after players come onto court.
I like it, personally. Just get rid of the faff. 71% think it's just the right amount. 11% think it should be less. 18% think it should be more. I think just about right. What do you think?
I think reducing it is a good thing. I think it's a fudge. I think either you have a warm-up or you don't. I think the tennis warm-up is a total oddity and I would scrap it tomorrow. But yeah, the less faffing, the better. So reducing it a bit is solving part of the problem for me.
Okay. Well, yeah, effectively, I agree with you. I'd need to watch more of these matches. I also need to watch them back to back. A couple of people did point out that I suppose it depends if you have a built-in period between matches, because people do need time to go and go to the bathroom, etc. But maybe you just build in a little bit of time between matches. Having them out there in that big build-up and then nothing for 5-10 minutes is a bit frustrating. But anyway.
Finally, fans moving around and talking during play, which I don't actually... maybe it felt different in the stadium, but I didn't feel like the evidence of that was particularly... If you didn't know that that was a rule being implemented, I don't think that you would have been aware of it.
No, I think mainly tennis crowds, their default position is not to talk all the time during points. I think that they might not have been being told to be quiet, please, but I think that people, yeah, they want to watch the tennis most of the time. So, yeah, I didn't even notice that was a rule, really, unless I'd known about it beforehand.
So on balance, David, I think we're broadly more pro than against, but our feelings about the rule changes that have been thrown at the wall are nuanced.
Yeah, nuanced. Which I think I'd have expected them to be. And yeah. Mostly, the only one that's really caused me a surprise is the headset one. I thought I would think it was good, but I didn't think I'd care any more than on-court coaching, and I do.
Yeah, I can't tell you how much I care about headset coaching. It's my new thing. Right then, shall we talk about another set of ATP finals that will
Why
be
don't we?
Kicking off on Sunday? The draw has been done. It involved Boris Becker, who was only an hour late, David. So
yes,
good week for ATP draw ceremonies.
Arrived at the Radio 2 studios an hour and a bit late. But anyway,
it's all right, because Radio doesn't run to any kind of schedule at all. So
they got it just in time before the show actually finished transmission. But anyway, it is the biggest audience in Britain, so I can understand why they would have wanted to go on it. And it revealed two groups, incidentally named the Pete Sampras group and the Boris Becker group, in honour of the 1996 final, which I don't know whether you had a chance to see the four-minute video I sent to you a couple of hours ago of highlights of their final in Hanover, those two. And it's just mesmerising tennis, two single-handed backhands, all this big game, serve and volley tennis going head-to-head, and Becker in his backyard, Sampras coming in and beating him in the fifth set. It's just one of the great matches. And yeah, so the groups have been named after those two. In Sampras's group is Nadal, Dimitrov, Thiem, and Goffin. And then Becker's group has Federer, Zverev, Cilic, and Sock. And I suppose the big question mark really is Nadal's fitness, isn't it? Which he seems to be pretty positive about, or at least has said he's done all the right things and he's hoping to be 100%. Incidentally, it does appear, or at least I haven't heard this officially said, but it feels as though he has been given a Monday night start to give him absolutely as much time as he possibly can have to be fully fit.
Yeah, he certainly was smiling throughout the launch party yesterday evening. I mean, he doesn't tend to disguise the way he's feeling, Rafa Nadal. He has been doing his pre-tournament press as we've been speaking. So I have been monitoring Twitter to see if any assessments of his fitness have been coming out of that. And I haven't seen anything much, which suggests to me that he's optimistic. I think he's going to be fine. I really think he's going to be fine. He's not my pick to win it, because this court belongs to Roger Federer. I think Federer has to be the favourite on this court. You know, Rafa's never won a tour finals. I think that will stoke up his motivation big time. I think he's desperate to win one. And I think having the year-end number one secured removes a bit of pressure that he might have placed on his own shoulders. Do you think one year they'll have a Nikolai Davidenko group and whoever he beat in the final? Was it Del Potro he beat in the final? Do you think there'll be a Davidenko and Del Potro group year? No.
I think that's relatively unlikely, but you never know. But on the subject of Nadal, I actually think that I tend to agree. I think given that he's already year-end number one, guaranteed, given that he's had a fantastic year, given how much he wants to be fresh next year, I don't think he would risk it if he wasn't feeling pretty confident that he was going to be fit, because he's not going to want to get embarrassed, is he, by any of these guys, specifically and particularly Federer, I'm sure,
no.
In the final.
No.
So, you know, I think he probably would have pulled out if he didn't feel relatively confident. So, incidentally, the doubles draws groups have been named after Woodbridge and Woodford and Elting and Harhouse.
I love that.
Yeah, that's nice as well. And, teams like Murray and Suarez and the Bryan brothers have been drawn in together, it's a cracking. I mean, it's only a couple of matches for a session, but it's enough, isn't it? It's a really good ticket.
So who's coming through the groups then, David? Let's cut to the chase.
Pete
Sampras' group, Nadal, Dimitrov, Thiem, Goffin.
I will go with Nadal and Dimitrov out of there, I think.
Me too.
I will go with Federer, Zverev or Cilic. I will go for Federer and Cilic.
Do you think they'll hold back the Federer-Zverev match to Thursday? Do you think that will be the final group stage match, and they'll be hoping that that will be to decide the winner of the group?
Well, they don't do it like that, do they? They have the first match, and then the two winners play one another. That's how it works within the group.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, it is.
I always thought it was potluck.
No. They have the two winners playing each other, so that then the third one has the best chance of being live and still relevant.
That makes great sense.
Who'd have thought it?
Right.
There you go.
Yeah,
Catherine's only been watching
entirely
the World Tour Finals for 20 years, and now
it's entirely logical. Oh, that's great. It's lovely when things are logical. So you're going Federer and who?
I'm going to go Cilic.
Federer and Cilic, and then who's in the final?
Right, well, I mean, let's just be boring and say Federer and Nadal, Federer to win it.
Oh, David. A big question for you. Is Dimitrov going to finally get a win over Nadal this year?
No.
No. Oh. Sorry,
what do you
Grigor.
Think? Go on.
Oh, I'm done. I'm done with making Dimitrov-based predictions, David.
Yeah, so what are you going to go for?
Probably not. But there is, but he has got so close so many times, hasn't he?
Who are your two players, Catherine, from each group?
And I do think the court will suit him. I'm going to go for Federer and Zverev and Nadal and Dimitrov. Yeah, Federer, Zverev, Nadal, Dimitrov, Federer, Nadal.
And Federer will win it.
And Federer will win it.
Right, there we are.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Couple of bits of any other business. The Stefan Edberg Sportsmanship Award. I'd give it to Del Potro, David.
Yeah, well, it's already been given to Roger Federer.
Has it?
Yes, it has. And you obviously haven't been monitoring our social media today, have you?
Are you sure that's not just Twitter sort of honorarily awarding it to Roger Federer as they always do? No, I thought you were just sort of assuming it would be awarded to Roger Federer as it always is.
No, it had already been awarded. And I just pointed out on social media
He's a great sportsman, but for goodness sake, did he give Nicolas Almagro a hug on court and physically help him up and carry his bag off court in Paris this year?
No, he
blooming well didn't.
Anyway, I got absolutely hammered, as you can probably imagine, by many people who made all manner of accusations in my direction. But anyway, as I think anybody who listened to our Roger Federer special knows, I can't say enough good about him generally. I do think he's a fantastic sport, but I fully accept it's the players who vote for this thing. I just think that it ends up being who do we know best? Who's our favourite player when we were growing up, and who's our favourite player to watch? I don't think sportsmanship comes into their
do you
thinking
think
when they
Federer's
vote.
People are fixing it?
No.
Do you think there's ballot stuffing?
No, I don't.
I'm being facetious, David.
But anyway, yeah, of course you are. But I don't think that... I just think...
Okay, well, we'll crown our own winner then. Who are you going for?
Well, it should be Del Potro, in my opinion, as well. And 56% of the 900 votes that I cast... I didn't cast them. I challenged people to cast them. 56% went for Del Potro against 44% for Federer. So into that what you can. But I have to say, it is noticeable. I was trying to get people to be objective, which on Twitter is a ridiculous goal. But I did try to get people to vote just what they thought. And within minutes, I could tell that the numbers were being skewed by various fans coming on and just trying to adjust the numbers. But there we are.
Justice will be done, David, at our end of season awards.
They will, of course. I'm glad you're getting on board finally.
Balance will be restored to the universe. And I believe you have one... Actually, no, we have two bits of any other business. You want to give a mention to Mr. Scott Sears, who's trying to do the sort of thing that makes the rest of us plebs feel like underachieving... lazy people.
Scott Sears, son of Nigel, brother of Kim and brother-in-law of Andy Murray. Nigel Sears, when we're at BT Sport in the middle of the night, quite regularly shows me a picture of Scott Sears that frankly makes me feel incredibly inferior. Whether he's you know, charging through a jungle in his full combat gear, or whether he's having a boxing match or whatever it might be. And he's an incredible character. He's been in the army. He's now doing a solo trip to the South Pole and trying to become the youngest man ever to do so. I mean, quite frightening what he's doing. But
what's
anyway.
He going to do when he gets there? He's just going to be alone at the South Pole.
Just get there. That's the goal, I think. But anyway, so that's what he's doing.
Right.
And then the other thing is the Fed Cup, isn't it, Catherine?
Human beings are mad. Fed Cup final, yep, about to get underway. USA and Belarus. But the very disappointing news announced earlier in the week by Victoria Azarenka that she wouldn't be able to travel to Minsk for the final because the custody issues surrounding her son and her split with her baby's father are continuing, and she's unable to leave California, which is just a desperate shame. She keeps saying she hopes that it'll be resolved soon, but I don't get the impression that that's entirely within her hands. So when we'll next see Victoria Azarenka on a tennis court, I don't know.
No clue whatsoever. And it does mean Belarus in their first ever Fed Cup final are represented in the singles by Alexandra Sasnovich and Aryna Sabalenka. And they are up against the United States, trying to win the Fed Cup for the first time since 2000. It's a long old time. And they've got Coco Vandeweghe and Sloane Stephens as singles players on their team, with Alison Risk and Shelby Rogers in the doubles. But it's an interesting one, isn't it? I mean, Coco Vandeweghe has put some form together recently. Sloane Stephens has not won a set since winning the US Open. And this is a big test, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, on paper, it's an immensely one-sided contest. But Belarus have overachieved to get here. They are the Belgium of the Fed Cup. They are giant killers. And I've no doubt they'll overperform, you know, relative to their rankings. I mean, in the final, whether that they will be able to overperform enough to beat the States, I don't know. But certainly, you look at the recent form of Sloane Stephens, and I don't think anybody's going to put a single penny on her to win a tennis match at the moment. So it could get interesting.
It could, and the atmosphere at those things, and it will, I would imagine, be pretty intense in Belarus. But I love watching the Fed Cup final. I always think it's a fantastic atmosphere, a great event. And I just wish it was getting, I mean, a bit more attention, really, and a bit more TV coverage. I know that you can watch the stream of it on the Fed Cup website, and there's various countries around the world that are screening it. I think Tennis Channel have got it in the States, but it's going to be pretty difficult to follow in the UK. You can watch it on the Fed Cup website, but it just, that sort of event needs a bigger audience because it's worldwide, because it's a cracking event.
Agreed, David. I think that's it. I don't think there is any other business to clean up.
You're on your way to the O2, aren't you?
I'm on my way to the O2, or I will be in a few short hours. I'm having a chat with Jamie Murray tomorrow. I bet you he is desperate to win this title. Suarez. It's been a good year for them, but nothing compared to last year, where, you know, they won two slams. They both achieved number one in the world individually and as a pairing. They reached the semi-finals, which I think in itself was a bit of a disappointment at the O2. I mean, and I just think it would be great for them to round off the year like this. I do understand that they've already committed to one another to play together next year, which is great news because they're a lovely pairing.
They are. And then Catherine and I will both be at the O2 for BBC Radio 5 Live, commentating on the radio.
We will.
Do have a listen.
Yeah. Tune in and join us for our next tennis podcast, which will be a wrap of all things O2 and a heavy scrutiny on our various predictions. So join us then. We've been the Tennis Podcast, brought to you in association with The Telegraph and with Eurosport, and we'll be back soon.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.